Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this hot, scorching 24th of July 2010. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 90 minutes as I discuss the world of sports. Busy week this past week, a lot going on, a lot of bad stuff, a lot of annoying things, too many things that had to do with, too many off the field things, so to speak. Not enough. It wasn't enough. I like a little drama. I like a little controversy, but I like it to be on the field. I don't like it to take place off the field. We had too much of that this week. Again, a lot going on. But we'll begin with what took center stage to me, and that's college football agents running wild, players running wild, the NCAA being the NCAA, pretending that it's squeaky clean and just blame everybody except itself, basically. And that's what you had this week. That's what you had with this situation down in South Beach, where, of course, you had with the entire SEC, all at Frank Gore's birthday party down in Miami. You had players from North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, who all attended a party hosted by one Frank Gore of the San Francisco 49ers. It comes out. Questions arise about how did he get, who paid for him to get down there. Did the agent pay the airfare? Did the agent use it as a recruiting tool to get some of these players who are going to be top first round picks in the 2011 draft? Of course, the agent used it as a recruiting tool. But this is nothing new here. This has been going on forever. Agents trying to recruit these players. Agents don't listen. Agents are like, they're like scouts in a way. Scouts don't wait until, scouts don't wait till the season's over to look at tape and, start looking at these players for the upcoming draft, for the, following draft. They look basically, game one. When college football kicks off in less than a month, I guarantee you there will be some scouts at every single one of these games of these top picks in particular and just in general. But that's how agents work. I mean, agents have been going on forever. There's nothing new. But yet, the NCAA pretends like take a situation of this magnitude for the NCAA to finally open up its eyes. And of course, you had SEC Alabama coach Nick Saban basically ripped the agents, and comparing them to pimps. When in reality, the real pimps in this whole situation are not the agents. I mean, agents are not. I'm not trying to take all the responsibility off the agents. But the agents are agents. They're gonna do what they've got to do to build up their clientele. And that means giving a guy $100,000 a couple of days before the draft starts, a couple of days before season ends. That's what they do. They're not gonna change. I mean, you wanna try to police them? Go ahead, try to police them. Does the NCAA really want to police them? Do they really want to crack down on this problem? I have questions about that. But you want to talk about the real pimps. The real pimps are, the presidents, the boosters, television networks, coaches who are making millions off these players. Those are real pimps. one thing you have to understand about college athletes, and anybody who's been to college, unless you come from the, you know, unless you come from a well-to-do background, you know, a lot of college athletes, students are broke. They don't have any money. They have enough just to get by. You have your little card that you can get your, you know, you have your card that gets you into every library on the campus. You have your card that can get you a couple meals in the cafeteria. Some of us had different plans than others. I mean, you had, you have a card that can get you, you know, maybe get you a bag of chips at a vending machine. But for the most part, that can you do your laundry with, taking it back to Temple now, diamond dollars. Most of these guys, athletes, don't have it. They don't have any money. They don't come from, you know, they wasn't born with silver spoons in their mouths. So when an agent, you know, tosses them a few dollars, you don't think, do you really think that they're not going to take it? I mean, let's be honest about it. Let's be real about it. Do you think when an agent offers their family a place to stay, they're not going to take care of that? They're not going to take advantage of the opportunity, as in the case with Reggie Bush, which I certainly will get to. That's a joke and a half. Let's be realistic. And right now, it's too late. This thing has gone so out of control. There was a time, had the NCAA, I've always been one who believed that athletes should be paid. But now I'm like, it doesn't matter anymore because there's not enough money you can give them that would make up for somebody handing them a check for $100,000. It's too late. You know, had the NCAA set up a system 15 or 20 years ago to give these guys some money, maybe there would be less of this activity. There would still be some isolated incidents, but maybe there would be less, you know, less occurrences. But right now, you know, the beast is loose right now. And again, the NCAA, all of a sudden, now wants to try to get tough. And when all, you know, after years of ignoring these occurrences and these situations, now they want to try to get tough. I'm going to give you a couple instances. It's an article by Greg Doyle a couple of days ago. It basically states how many times the NCAA has ignored situations of this magnitude. And it starts with the 96 Florida Gators, who, of course, won the national championship and had a bunch of players on that team that were paid by agent Tank Black, who was one of the very few agents that got caught and was, you know, and did some jail time. But, I mean, you know, 96 Gators, Black bought numerous players, you know, gave them money, cars, and what have you. What happened to the University of Florida? Nothing. Nothing at all. '97 season, year where Michigan won the national championship or shared it with Nebraska, Charles Woodson accepted more than $10,000 in cash and gifts from an agent. What happened to Michigan? Nothing. Despite the steps, the NCAA said it couldn't prove that Michigan knew. Really? Come on. I mean, really. Even though all this stuff is on public record, you can go to the library and find this stuff. All the documents, information that have this particular case detailed. How about last year, or 2 years ago, with Alabama and the whole Andre Smith situation. Andre Smith gets suspended for the Sugar Bowl when they played Utah, lost to Utah that year, 2 years ago, because they found out that an agent had taken care of Smith's family. What happens? Alabama, you know, says, okay, we got this, NCAA, we got this. We'll just suspend him for a meaningless Sugar Bowl game. We already lost a chance to win the national championship anyway by losing to Florida the previous in the SEC championship. We'll suspend him and keep it moving and collect a check, collect a Sugar Bowl check. Okay, no big deal. We lost the game, but we got paid from the Sugar Bowl. What does the NCAA do? Okay, Alabama, thank you. Keeps it moving. I just gave you three separate incidents where players got paid, were taking care of agents, and the NCAA did absolutely nothing. They did nothing. Now they want to get tough. Now they want to throw Reggie Bush, you know, in a, basically under the bus, make it a senior and center. You know, Reggie Bush is the example. Now they want to get tough. It's a joke. It is an absolute joke. The only way that I don't think there's one particular solution that can stop agents from doing this, and that can police agents. You can't police all the agents because agents have gotten like criminals now. They're just so smart in terms of how they, you know, how they do business. They have these runners. They have these wannabe fake agents who are not real licensed agents, as you saw in the Reggie Bush having two of them with Lloyd Lake and the other guy, Lloyd Lake, and there was one other guy who was working with Lloyd Lake that was taking care of Reggie Bush. They were not real agents. Lloyd Lake, these two guys were not real agents. But they've gotten so sophisticated in how they do business. I mean, it's very, very hard to catch. And it's almost impossible to catch when the NCAA isn't using all its resources and putting money into helping catch these agents. As of right now, there are 39 states that have a law to punish agents if they get caught. 39. Last time I checked, we had, 50 states in the U.S. and the United States? I thought we had 50, right? Okay, just checking. 39 states have a law to punish rogue agents. Not 50, 39. So do they really want to catch these guys? Are they really that serious about cracking down on this? Or they just using USC as an example of, you know, we'll get tough when we have to. We want to maintain academic integrity. Out of the billions of dollars that the NCAA makes, hundreds of million dollars the NCAA makes, how much of those millions are put into, you know, committees and into working with local law enforcement, the state police trying to crack down on these agents paying off these kids and taking advantage of these players. How much of that money is geared towards that? I would like to know that number. Because you read all these cases, and local law enforcement, you know, even with what happened down in South Beach down in Miami, you know, local law enforcement is the last to find out. They're the last, you know, the attorney generals are like, oh, by the way, you know, this happened? Oh, really? It's not on their radar. They're worried about a million other things. It's not on their radar. And what that tells you is the NCAA has not been in contact with them. The NCAA is not working with them. They're just finding out, like, on the news, just like me and you. So again, I ask you, how serious is the NCAA about busting agents and about cracking down on this? And I say that they're not that serious. You know, they bust USC. They bust USC after what? How many years was Pete Carroll a coach? Like 9 years? I think he came in 2001. They bust USC after what? How many national championships did they win? Two? How many BCS games did USC appear in? Like at 1.7 straight? How many Pac-10 titles? How much success, how much money did USC make over the course of the last 7 to 8 years? How many Reggie Bush jerseys? How many Matt Leinart jerseys? How many Mike Williams jerseys? How many Dwayne Jarrett jerseys? How much money did USC make before it's like, okay, enough. It's over. No more. It's time to put our foot down. Okay. I mean, think about it. How many years now? I mean, think about it. This was a 4-year investigation with Reggie Bush. It took you 4 years to realize that an agent was paying for his family to stay at a condominium and was giving him Reggie Bush money and was giving him access to drive nice cars around campus. Everybody on USC's campus knows that Reggie Bush. Everybody in Southern California knew what kind of car. What kind of SUV Reggie Bush is driving? Everybody except the damn NCAA. Everybody knew. Now, when the program is in, you know, sort of decline, when Pete Carroll leaves, when, you know, USC isn't as good as it once was, now it's time to pounce on them. Now let's take advantage of them. Let's jump on now while they're down. They're down anyway. They're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be national champions. They're not going to be a national championship team. You know, Lane Kiffin, you know, he's not Pete Carroll as a coach. Let's get him now. This is a perfect time to get him to make our mark. Even though we've been waiting, you know, let's speed up this investigation. You know, it's not the Kennedy investigation. The stuff was cut and dry with what was going on with Reggie Bush. Everybody knew. O.J. Mayo as well. So, again, I cannot take the NCAA seriously. Again, you want to know, again, the real pimps who are just making boatloads of money off these players year in and year out, as the NCAA signs a $10.8 billion television contract to broadcast the rights of the NCAA tournament, basketball tournament. How much money of that would a player see? Zero. Zero. I'm supposed to be worried about academic integrity, a scholarship, please. Player gets a chance. I'm on the other side now. If a player takes money, just don't get caught. That's what I would say to him. Just don't get caught. Take the money. Just don't get caught. I don't care anymore. I don't care about trying to maintain the integrity of the NCAA. The NCAA is a business. It is not about academics. It is about business, period. It's a corporation. No different than IBM. No different than, you know, than any business that, say, a Donald Trump owns. No business, no different than a record company. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this 90-minute edition, I'll be taking you to the bottom half of the 12 o'clock, 12:30 today. We'll look at the NFL. We'll look at the Players Association versus the NFL. Are we going to have football in 2011? We'll see. We'll look at some of those issues and where I stand with the issues that are ongoing with the Players Association and also with the union and the NFL. We'll talk about that. We'll also look at this superstar point guard who went out of the Bayou. We'll talk about that, and we'll also start our series off of bounce back teams. We'll look at what has to have bounce back teams from 2008. Who I think will be better off in 2010. We'll talk about, we'll begin our series on that. as well on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. 20 minutes after 11 o'clock hour, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm the host, Cyril Quinn. Of course, you had a chance this week to listen to both sides of the story as far as the NFL goes, as far as the Players Association and the owners versus what the owners and what Commissioner Goodell and what the rest of the NFL had to say on in regards to the upcoming CBA. There are three issues I wanted to deal with. DeMar Smith and Jeff Pasch both spoke on ESPN back-to-back days, and of course they both had they both had their own sides to what they believe what was right for the NFL and what was right for the players and right for the sport. There are three issues again that to me have stuck out. One, the 18 game schedule, the rookie salary wage, scale wage, and ACH testing. I'll take the 18-game schedule first. The NFL wants an 18-game schedule because of obvious reasons. Number one is more money. Okay, it's more money. They'll make more money adding two extra games and cutting off two preseason games. Even though the owners make money off the preseason games, It doesn't compare to what money they'll make for the regular season games. Two extra regular season games. The second reason why they want an 18-game schedule is, and this is, it's kind of, you want to call it sick, you want to call it a disgrace, but it is what it is. As of right now, if you play in the NFL, you have to play at least 3 years to earn 5 years of post-career health care. Now, think about it. The more games you play, the more likely, the more likely that you're going to get injured, the more likely that you will not make it to play in 3 years. And keep in mind, the average career in the NFL is about three and a half years. Anyway, so again, you add two games to the schedule. You might have certain guys that get injured, that have career-threatening injuries before those 3 years are up. Oh, there you go. Oh well, no health care for them. Don't think for a minute that the owners are not thinking like this. Don't think for a minute. They are just as deceiving and just as deviant as they're hustlers. These guys didn't become rich by doing everything by the book and by being white as snow. Trust me. They become billionaires by accident. Think about how much health care costs in this country now in 2010. And again, 3 years of service guarantees you as an NFL player 5 years of post-healthcare. 5 years of post-healthcare. They have to cover everything. You get in a car accident, break your neck, everything that has to be, all that has to be covered under the NFL's healthcare plan. So that to me is the underlying reason why the NFL wants an 18-game schedule, wants two more games. Players are talking tough. You know, they don't want any part of it. But for the right price, trust me, they'll take it for the right price. If they're compensated well enough, if they're compensated to a point to where it's going to be some, you know, give them some extra money, then play their mind, then guys start becoming more receptive. Believe me, it's all about the money. Me, myself, I can't listen. I don't care if they play 25 games. You know, I'm not out there, you know, I don't have a 350-pound, 6'8" defensive end chasing me and hitting me, so I care less. I can't get enough football. To me, 18 games does not water down the sport. I don't want to say about a playoff team. You know, I think, you know, making the playoffs is tough enough. I think I enjoy the fact that the NFL is basically an event every Sunday. I enjoy that. The NBA drives me crazy with how many meaningless games it is. You know, baseball, 162 games, even though regular season does mean something, it still is, you know, long as I don't know what, but still, the NBA drives me nuts with the 82 game schedule. I wish the NBA, you know, let them cut their schedule down to about 60. But the NFL, you like the aspect that there is, you know, it's basically an event every single week. So I don't care how many games they play. I mean, especially 18. To me, 18 is a perfect amount. Probably if I had my choice, I would cut down the preseason to, say, 3 games. Okay? You know, play your stars a little bit in the first game. They can play the entire second game, and then nobody plays. No stars will play the third game. That's how I would maneuver it. Or they can, there's been talk about, you know, of a developmental league, to where guys can get more reps in with running the offenses and what have you, especially new rookies coming in. Fine, that's perfect. There's ways to get around that. You can expand the rosters that will help teams, you know, deal with the physicality and the extra rigors that two more games will provide. There's ways you can get around that. That's not a big deal. The 18-game schedule is not a big deal to me. The second issue, so I'm all for the 18-game schedule. The second issue, rookie scale wage. It was noted by Jeff Kosh that, you know, when the top 50 athletes in terms of earnings came out this past week, you know, basically, there were guys on the list who were rookies that made, you know, Matthew Stafford was on that list in the top 50 as a rookie because he signed a $41.5 million signing bonus. To me, that's a problem. And this is where, you know, I'm siding with the NFL and with the it sounds funny to say this, with the owners as far as there should be a rookie salary cap. The NBA does well. It works in the NBA. Rookies can only make a maximum of $3 million, a little bit over $3 million a year for the first 4 years of their career, first 3 or 4 years of their career. Shouldn't be any different. I would do it by position, because you have to understand, you know, a quarterback is more valuable than a running back. So I would use a scale. I would scale it by position to where the quarterback still can make the most money. But to me, your signing bonus can't be more than $10 million. Yeah, I mean, you can't have more. These signing bonuses are getting out of control. As far as guys having not proven themselves. I mean, Jamarcus Russell just stole $36 million, basically. $36 million signing bonus to do what? To eat, party in Oakland, and then do nothing. And now he's out of the NFL. $36 million. It makes no sense. And again, the owners complain about this, but they're the ones paying them. giving them this money. Players don't pay themselves. So I absolutely believe that there should be a rookie salary cap in the NFL. Again, they can figure it out as far as what could be the maximum amount of money you can receive in a signing bonus. I say $10 million. I would say $10 million and leave it at that. That would give you more money to pay, you know, your veteran players. I mean, the veterans should be compensated for. Guys who have been in the league, you know, who have earned, who have been.
Sam Bradford can get $50 million for the season. He's got with a bad coach. He didn't even do hard to play that. He was just being outside of him. So what it takes to do is I'm paying man a top value, that's my top like that. I'm demanding no less than $70 million. So I'm just for that, I'm a three. So pay man in the top value on those $50 million. Compared to what these rookies are, they absolutely deserve. He's a two-season Super Bowl franchise quarterback. And I've done it for a long period of time. And the third issue is ACA testing. Now, you've seen baseball is not going to introduce testing into the minor league, kind of use the minor league as to see how that works out. I'm all for cleaning up the sport in terms of football. Especially with football, because the physicality that plays a major role for football, because you don't realize any of the sports in the field. But they have to protect this system. And you heard this doctor, Don Catlin, say that claims that, you know, the test. And they claim that the test would only detect after 6 to 12 hours. And these players are smart. The guys around them are smart in terms of how they can participate, how to get the test. Again, you can't just, I guess you can use it as a guinea pig in baseball, maybe, ABA, minor league. You can't do that in NFL. Can't do that. You look at the where, you know, a guy comes up positive because the test has not, you know, the test has not been expected. Then you have a disaster. You basically talk about his career and cost him money out of his pocket because you have to test this. And I don't see it coming about for another 5 years. We have to make sure that this ABA session is a good fit. There can't be any questions about it. Unlike baseball can use my work, whichever word. NFL doesn't have that much. The NFL has to systematically, it has to be perfect, like being perfect. So I'm sorry with players on the fact that, you know, until you perfect this test, we're not going to lose that test. So I have to go on the field for that, in that standpoint. And besides, I don't think steroid use in the NFL has been as rampant as it has been, say, in baseball. I think the NFL does a good job with, you know, in baseball, it's awful at that. These guys have to pull them out and then bust the guys simply before it. But I think the NFL does a great job at, you know, cracking down on steroid use. How many guys have been getting 4 games suspended over the past 2 years, over the past 10, 15 years, just over the talent stuff? I mean, Arizona did a pretty good job at that. So, I mean, I'll take that process and go protect your test. right now, it's not ready like that. He's going after it. And we have a doctor that comes out and says that it is really important. You know, if a guy uses 8 years and that wears off, that's 12 hours, that's a problem. The testing should be sophisticated enough to where somebody uses 8 years on Monday, you test them on a Friday, to see if, you know, your testing should be able to pick up. You just to be able to pick up the ACA, so that should be in our system. That's in our system. And I guarantee they're at least they're five answers. I mean, these agents, these guys have five everywhere that know when testing's coming. That know when they're going to test. I just want those things. You're not going to fool these players. Those are the three main issues that I think will, you know, probably, you know, determine whether or not we see football in 2011. I still think worse comes to worse. We're going to, you know, players will be locked out next month, but there will be football in 2011. There hasn't been a lockout. It hasn't been, you know, there has been a strike. Last lockout since, you know, 1987. So I have to get in stuff to get out of that. And think that that they will work out a deal. The major thing about this whole process is, you know, the owners are complaining about this and that, about, you know, about the deal, one sided. All the players. They're the ones who signed this deal, you know, a couple years ago. And this deal was signed like that. But this deal was, I mean, what happened between now and when they first signed the deal? It's not like the deal did not change. It's the same deal that was signed in the last collective bargaining deal. I mean, you just want to get smart all the time. I don't understand how they almost signed this deal, because they're coming down and it's so one-sided. As far as the players get the revenue, as far as, you know, some of these things are like, not much has changed about the deal as far as the revenue standpoint. And then Come on this late position of the Saturday morning wake-up call. Chris Paul was out. We'll talk about with his Nuggets, and we'll talk about, and I will give you the proof that he should go, that should be after him, that should be on the phone immediately going after him. And I'll tell you, you know, and I'll tell you why this is not good for the NBA. We'll get into that. We'll get into that and much, much more coming up on the wake-up on a Saturday morning with that call.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, coming up on the 12 o'clock hour. The Tennessee Titans, who last season were 8-8, are looking to looking to get back in the playoffs. Remember, 2008, they had a great season, 13-3. Kerry Collins played well. They were dominant defensively. Lost a tough game, a brutal game to the Baltimore Ravens in the divisional playoffs. In a game which they should, should have won. Turnovers killed them in that game. They outplayed Baltimore on the field as far as yardage was concerned, but again, lost that all-important turnover battle. Last season, it came back down to earth, 8-8, got off to a, at one point, I believe they were 0-7 at one point. They were 0-7 at one point. Collins gets yanked. Vince Young came in, played well. Chris Johnson, of course, had a record-breaking season as far as yards from scrimmage, over 2,500 yards, rush for 2,000 yards. Tremendous, had a great season. It's going to be a different kind of Tennessee team from a defensive standpoint. They lost over the offseason. They lost Kyle Vandenbosch. They lost Keith Bullock. And, you know, of course, 2 years ago they lost Albert Haynesworth. So defensively, they're looking a lot different than what they've looked like in the past. You know, Corlin Finnegan's coming off an injury plagued season. Their secondary was all beat up last year. Last year, they really struggled with that. Schedule is not crazy. Their schedule, you know, they open at home with the Raiders, at home with Pittsburgh. They add New York. Then they have Denver, at Dallas, at Jacksonville, Eagles home, at San Diego. Then they have a bye week. They need to get off to a good start. I mean, you should beat the Raiders. You should beat the Steelers with no Roethlisberger at home. You know, you should beat Denver at home. Giant game will be difficult. At Dallas won't be easy. You should beat Jacksonville. You have the Eagles. Again, you have the Eagles at home. So they should get off to a pretty good start. And again, even after the bye, the schedule at Miami, it won't be easy. They have at Miami, Washington at home, at Houston, Jacksonville home, Indianapolis at home, and then they finish with Houston at home, then at Kansas City, at Indianapolis. Don't have to play Indianapolis till week 14. Only thing about that is you have to play them, within the next couple of weeks, so you'd rather have them spread out a little bit more. But for the most part, their schedule is not crazy. I don't know what to make of Tennessee right now. I'm not so sure that they won't be 8-8 again this season. I don't know what to expect out of Vince Young. Defensive line, I think, has major question marks with their front seven in general. They lost a lot of talent and a lot of leadership over the past 2 years. You know, Chris Johnson, is he going to have another year? You know, think about it. He had a record-breaking year, and they still were 8-8. And he played as well as any running back could possibly play. He had one of the great years of all time for a running back. You know, Indianapolis is still there. Houston is still there. I don't expect anything out of Jacksonville. But you still have those two, two teams that I think, frankly, right now are ahead of them in Indianapolis and Houston. And the strength of the team is still the offensive line. They still have one of the best offensive lines in football, hands down. Their offensive line with their running game. This team goes as far as, to me, Vince Young takes them. You know, we we've heard all these things about Vince Young. Of course, he had the dumb bar incident, the bar fight. But putting that aside, we've heard how much he had matured, how much he's studying now. We're gonna see now in 2010 because he came up last season. He was in a no lose situation as far as I'm concerned. The team is stunk. The season was over. Came in when the team was what 0-4, 0-5. The season was over. He came in, won some games, and was playing with house money for the most part. This year they start fresh. I'm sure they're expecting to make the playoffs. This is year number five. Okay, this is year five. This is his fifth year. At this point stage in the game, we should be seeing some development. We should be seeing some progress. I mean, he and Matt Leinart are of course will always be forever linked together. And Jay Cutler as well. That draft class of 2006. It's put up a shut up time for Vince Young. Is he worthy of a contract, of a big time contract extension? Does he have the potential to be a franchise quarterback? We're going to find out with this season. He's won the respect of his teammates back to an extent. Has the best running game in football. Great offensive line. So they're not in love with their, you're not in love. Now the one thing about it, you are not in love with these receivers. I mean, Kenny Britt, Justin Gage. That is one thing that they should have did a much better job at addressing in the offseason that they didn't do. Not in love with their receivers by any stretch of imagination. But he's going to have to show, to me, again, if Vince Young doesn't show any improvement this season, I'm Tennessee, I'm moving on. I'm not waiting for Vince Young. I'm not waiting, because I'm not giving, he's not, he, I mean, to me, he would not have earned an extension. And I'm not, I would dare anything wants to go out there and give him a $25, $30 million contract, sign and bones, go ahead, be my guest. So to me, this is a make or break year for one Vince Young, and how he performs will be how this season goes. So we'll see what happens with that as they look to bounce back from a 8-8 season after following a year with 2008, a year where they were 13-3. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll get into some baseball. Rory Oswalt still a Houston Astro as of this minute. So we'll talk about that. And I still have two former All Stars who are unemployed, who I would sign right now if I had to. Had the chance to. I'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Coach Roy Oswalt still has not been traded. The latest to come out of that is he is willing to work with a team as far as that 2012 2012 salary, which was he was scheduled to make $16 million. I think that some reports came out that he is willing to waive that option, so he can teams not to worry about giving him $16 million. $16 million in 2012. Now, if that is true, and again, that's just a report. If that is true, then I would say that he will be moved before this weekend is out. Again, if that is true, who knows? That would tell me that he barely wants to be out. That he barely wants out of Houston. I mean, Houston's going nowhere fast anyway. They're going nowhere fast. The team, they're clearly in a rebuilding mode. And he's at the latter stage of his career. So, but again, teams are not, the Phillies were not willing to give him, guarantee him $16 million for 2012. That was what was holding up to him being moved. He wants to go to the Cardinals. The Cardinals are in contention with the Philadelphia Phillies right now. The Phillies had the better prospects. They can offer a J.A. Happ. They have a Dominic Brown. They have a Jason Worth. The Phillies have more. The Phillies have more to offer than, say, the Cardinals. And the Cardinals definitely. And the Phillies have balked at paying Oswalt $16 million for 2012, and the Cardinals frankly cannot afford to take on that and try to sign Albert Pujols. Remember, Albert Pujols will be a free agent after the 2011 season. So they have to save up their pennies to try to get signed to what many people expect is going to be the biggest contract since A-Rod, signed his deal, 10 years, $275 million a couple of years ago. A lot of people think, Pujols is going to get $30 million a year. But again, Oswalt, that they say that he has kind of softened up on the $16 million option 2012 again. Until I hear him come out and say it, then I won't believe until I hear him come out and say it. Because you don't have that many years to pitch. Are you really walking away from $16 million? I mean, you gotta think about that for a second. Are you really walking away from $16 million? So until I hear him come out and actually say that, I won't believe it until I hear him come out and say that. I'm not gonna go by any reports when it comes to that type of thing. A couple of teams are running away from their division right now. You have the Atlanta Braves and Texas Rangers, both have at least 7-game leads in their divisions. The NL East right now is a disaster. Outside the Atlanta Braves, the Mets, despite their win last night, the Mets and Phillies are in tailspins. I know the Phillies won last night. I know the Phillies won with Holiday pitching great, but the Phillies and Mets are both in bad shape. Both of them are in desperate needs of making trades to shake up their particular teams. The Phillies are going to have to pitch it, but the Phillies need a bat as well to kind of get their offense going. The Mets need a bat also Yeah, they've been getting good, pretty good starting pitching. They just can't hit. So look for both of those teams to be to make moves. I don't know how successful they're going to be in terms of this particular trade market. There's not a lot of starting pitching out there right now. So you know, not a lot of moves out there to be made as far as guys who are on the market. The problem with the trade market, what has happened is, you know, there are some teams who are supposed to be bad who are not going to trade guys because they're in pennant races. I mean, I could think of two teams off the top of my head, well, three teams off the top of my head who are supposed to be bad, or a lot of people had questions about Tampa Bay. I mean, a lot of people had questions about Tampa Bay. What would they do with, you know, guys like a guy like Carl Crawford? They're not trading Carl Crawford right now. They're in the middle of a pennant race. You know, they're leading the wild card, and they're just a couple games out of the two and a half games out of first place with the Yankees. They're not trading anybody. If anything, they're going to try to upgrade their team. San Diego, at the beginning of the season, everybody was looking their chops at the prospects of getting one of those bullpen people or getting Adrian Gonzalez. San Diego isn't moving anybody right now. And they have the best record in the National League. Again, they might make a move to try to upgrade their offense. If you need some pitching, that would be the place to call. Especially some bullpen help. And Chicago White Sox are in, you know, first place in their division. They're not trading anybody. A lot of people thought Paul Cornico would be a name that possibly could be moved. He's not, or Mark Burley. They're not going anywhere. You know, they're leading their division. They're gonna be battling with Detroit and Minnesota, fighting for that division. And only one of those teams are coming out. The wild cards, I'm telling you where the wild cards are coming out. The wild cards in the American League are coming out. It's coming out of the American League East. So one of those teams either going to be a combination of Yankees are going to the playoffs. So it's going to be the Yankees, Red Sox, or Yankees, Tampa Bay. They're going to the playoffs. One of those teams is going to get left out, and that's where the wild card is coming out of. In the National League, I would say the wild card, despite the fact that San Francisco leads the race right now, I would say the wild card is coming out of the NL Central based on the schedule. Both St. Louis and Cincinnati have easy schedules as when you compare them to what San Francisco, the Mets, the Dodgers, all those teams in the National League West have to deal with. Colorado. So Cincinnati, I think that National League Central will represent either Cincinnati or St. Louis. Well, both those teams are going to make the playoffs, I feel, and one of those teams will represent. Both those teams will be representative in terms of making the playoffs. But again, these surprising teams have kind of thinned out the trading market, what's available as far as some of these players. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I will begin over and unders for the NFL season. I will take a division. I will start out with a division as we, you know, head towards the NFL season, and two players who I would sign right now who are unemployed. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. will come back 20 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, taking you to the bottom half of the 12 o'clock hour, taking you to 12:30 today. There are two guys who right now don't have a job who at one point in time were near at the top of their particular sports. Well, one of them was near at the top of their particular sports, the other one was just an all-star. Yeah, Terrell Owens and Tracy McGrady. And I'm telling you, I would sign either one of them. I'll start with T.O. because, you know, the NFL is at the forefront right now. You know, this, all the baggage. Despite all the baggage that you've had with T.O., to me, when you look at his career, he is a guy who has came to play in the first year of each team he signed with. Now, last year, listen, he's in Buffalo. I mean, come on, who's the quarterback? Trent Edwards? Yeah, it was a bad situation. It was a bad offensive, horrible offensive team. He had no chance in Buffalo. Look at his first years in Philadelphia. Look at his first years in Dallas. Now he's at a point in his career where he is near the end. He's near the end. To me, he's going to be motivated. He is still, I would say, a valuable commodity as far as a workable commodity as far as being a receiver. He's no longer a top-tier receiver. We understand that. He's not Andre Johnson. He's not, you know, Larry Fitzgerald. But he's still, you know, he's still on a good team, could be a number two, a very good number two at that. I mean, he's better than some of these aging guys that we've seen in the last couple of years now either retire or become irrelevant as far as their production. I'm talking Torrey Holtz, Isaac Bruce's, Bobby Ingram's of the world. He's better than those guys. So if I'm a team who is trying to get to a Super Bowl, that's the only type of team that would be interested in him. He's not going to sell tickets anymore. That part of his career is over. So if you're a bad team, you don't even look at Terrell. You don't even look at him. I'm talking about a Super Bowl contending team. Well, I think I can be a contender if I put him on there. I would pick him up. You know, if I'm New England Patriots, I would pick him up. Well, maybe not New England, but with him, Randy Moss, now. Let me take that back. San Diego Chargers, hey, I would have to give him a look. Even the New York Jets, why not? You got everybody. I mean, New York Jets guy. You got every other star or so-called super. He would fit right into the Jets. Rex Ryan, he would fit perfect with the Jets. He fit right in. So that whole circus that's going on there. New York Giants. You got strong personalities in that locker room. Why not? Coughlin. We know how tough Tom Coughlin is. Even San Francisco. It wouldn't be the worst thing to go back to San Francisco. You know, work with Michael Crabtree. The question is Owens willing to do that? That's why, that's the thing. I don't think teams are sold on the fact that Owens is willing to take that kind of role. But again, I think it's worth a shot. The other guy I was talking to that I would sign from another sport is Tracy McGrady. McGrady, we know, you know, he's a much older than his age of 30. You understand that physically. But listen, he can come off your bench, give you 10 to 15 productive minutes. And he, unlike Terrell Owens, I think McGrady is willing to play that role. I don't think McGrady believes that he's a star anymore. I think McGrady will really be willing to blend in on a particular team. He's never wanted to be the man anyway. He's not a selfish player. You can absolutely get him on the cheap right now. From what I understand, he has a workout this weekend with the Chicago Bulls. I think if the Bulls were able to sign him, that would be a great pickup for the Bulls. A veteran off the bench that can give you some production out of that would be a great pickup for the Bulls. So those are two guys I would sign. Who you might want to say, eh, I don't know. But I would take my shots with him. I'm going to save over and unders for next week when I go, as I really go heavy into the NFL, because I really want to get into this. So, because there are some interesting picks here as far as what the odds makers have came up with, what your particular, how many games that your particular team is going to win. So I will save that for next week as I look into as we head closer and closer to the NFL. You can't taste the NFL yet. You can smell it. Now I kind of compare it to Thanksgiving dinner. You wake up early for some reason, even though you don't have to go to work, you don't have to go to school. You wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning on Thanksgiving morning. And you know dinner's not going to be ready for at least until 3 or 4 o'clock. You know, you got to wait at least 6 or 7 hours. But you can smell it in the kitchen. You can smell it. I mean, you don't even want to walk up the street and get you a bag of potato chips to quench it, to kind of get you through the day a little bit. You don't even want to do that. You're just thinking about that dinner. Like, you know, I don't even want to think about preseason right now. Training camp? Do I get excited about training camp? Okay. I'm not big on training camp. I'm not a training camp guy. But you can smell the NFL. You can't taste it yet. You can smell it. Then we still have, you still have well over a month before the season starts. Season start kicks off the second Thursday in September. You're going to have New Orleans and Minnesota, New Orleans and Minnesota play. I believe it'll be September 8th. Second Thursday in September. So, the week will kick off on that Thursday night where you have that, Sunday, of course, Monday, then you have that doubleheader on Monday night. You had that doublehead on Monday night that ESPN always does, that has done for the last three or four years. So, I mean, it's getting close, though. Getting close. But, the NBA has carried the summer, basically, which is rare. I mean, let's be honest, the NBA has carried the summer. A couple days on the sports radar, David Kahn, Minnesota Timberwolves president, who drafts a million point guards, says something, and then makes a dumb comment, gets fined $50,000 by the NBA for his comments about Michael Beasley's marijuana use. Here's a quote. He's a very young, immature kid who smoked too much marijuana and told me that he's not smoking anymore, Kahn said in an interview. But you trade a second round pick for him, okay. Whatever. NBA, $50,000 wasn't enough. You should have got $100,000 for what? It's just moronic comments, ignorant comments by David Kahn. Miami and Notre Dame football are going to renew their rivalry come 2012. They will play at Soldier Field in Chicago on October 6th and then play home and home series starting in 2016 at South Bend, Indiana. They're going to renew their series. Of course, Catholics versus convicts, that was what Notre Dame called it. In 85, you had Notre Dame just destroy Miami. So it was a tremendous rivalry that was ended by Notre Dame, by the way. So you'll see that in the next couple of years or so. I will see you next week. Have a great week. So long.